Hello and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis. I wanted to start this podcast because it felt like there were lots of roles, be it in distribution, marketing, programming, post-production, or even on a film set, that don't get the attention they deserve. Likewise to the women doing those jobs. I'll be interviewing guests on how they got their start in the film industry, what it is they actually do, what keeps them motivated, and what their ambitions are. Hello, Pod Pals. Thank you for downloading this episode. This week I spoke to Delphine Levens, who I was introduced to via Grace Barber Plenty of episode 2 fame. I would recommend, if you haven't already, listening to that one because there's some crossover and some name dropping. Both Delphine and Grace worked at Altitude Film Distribution, and now Delphine works in box office analytics. We had a really lovely chat about a whole side of film I haven't really touched on in the pod before, from data and how that can inform when a film is released, to trends in cinema, and why a film might underperform at the box office. We go on tangents about self-care, solo cinema trips, and that pest known as the patriarchy. Buckle up, it's episode 5 of Best Girl Grip.
Working out how to do this as succinctly as possible because I've only been working there about 3 months.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm working for a company called Gower Street Analytics, and what they do is they work with a number of territories globally and they forecast theatrical box office results way into the future, you know, a couple of years ahead. The purpose of that is for distributors to date their films more efficiently, find good release dates, be able to just see how the market might be acting in the future, and then also for cinemas it works on a level that they can kind of predict how much business they might have on any given point in time.
And how do you even know that industry, because data is quite a relatively new thing.
It is, exactly.
So is that something you just sort of stumbled across, or you kind of knew that you had an analytical mind and therefore you wanted to kind of go into that?
I think it's quite connected to the job I used to do. So I used to work doing theatrical sales for Altitude, who are a distributor, independent distributor. I mean, I've always wanted to get more involved with data. Kind of whilst doing that job, I realised how important data is when it comes to kind of film distribution, and maybe that it's not used enough and it's such a new industry. And I kind of basically, Gower Street were a company that had shown their software to us when I was working at Altitude. I was really impressed with it, and I thought, like, these guys are the future. So yeah, when the job came up there, I was really keen to work with them. But yeah, basically from my old job, I would sell films into cinemas. So the process you kind of have with a film that you're selling is that you're trying to work out when the best time to date it is, so when to release it, trying to work out similar films that it might perform like. So my job now is kind of doing that for everyone else's films on a, on a wider scale.
And you're a box office analyst?
I'm a box office analyst, exactly.
So what are you doing? What's a day-to-day kind of job?
Yeah, so, like, well, for example, today's Monday, so always the most important day in the biz for distribution because the weekend's just happened.
Right.
So I look after two territories. I look after the UK and the US. So I'll come in on a Monday and I will look at how things have performed over the weekend globally, but, you know, specifically in the UK and domestic as well. And then we'll go in and start tweaking things, basically because it's a piece of software that they use. So as an analyst, I kind of have to go into the back of the system, and it's a combination of me, like, wrangling the software and having an idea of what I want it to look like. So, for example, if a film's not performed very well, we might go in and take what we think it's going to do down, or vice versa. We can put that up and then look at how that's impacting the market for weeks to come. So yeah, it's kind of lots of, I mean, I didn't know much about the US market, that's one I'm learning, but for the UK, it's a market I kind of knew because working in sales, I was observing that for, you know, 3-ish years, so I have an idea of it. So it's basically just a process of applying my knowledge, feeding my human knowledge into a system that's kind of built to predict box office anyway, if that makes sense.
No, completely, yeah. What does that breakdown look like? Is that, you know, how's that data coming to you, and is it coming, like, from cinemas all over the UK?
Yes, essentially it comes from a company called Comscore, which is, they're a company who collect all of the box office data for the whole world, actually, or all of the countries where they collect box office data anyway. I think. And it's something that all UK distributors use anyway. They use the Comscore system, which basically just tells you who went to see what films in what cinemas and how much money it made. So yeah, that's where our data comes from. And then, yeah, it's kind of a case of the system harvesting that data and doing stuff with it, and then us supposed film expert humans making it look right. Yeah, it's really good fun. It's been a total change of pace to, obviously, like a selling job, which was very different in terms of my day-to-day. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. You learn so much, because I'm looking at basically every single film in the market constantly, so.
What do you find fun about it?
I think what I find fun about it is you start to get a real good idea of what films work and what films don't work, but then part of the fun is the surprise as well. So when films, you know, like, well, obviously I wasn't working there at the time, but for example, Black Panther, this time last year, just came out of nowhere and made huge amounts of money. Way more, I mean, I know it's a superior film, but way more than people are expecting. And so it's been really interesting to kind of watch the industry trends. I'm learning the differences between how the US operates, how the UK operates, and funny little quirks. Like, for example, films with Will Ferrell in do not make any money in Germany. I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know what the deeper issue that underlies that is, but there's just funny little quirks like that.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I'm a massive film nerd, and that was kind of what got me into the distribution sphere in the first place. So for me, it's like the idea of just being able to like watch what's going on in box office all over the world and have an opinion on that is really fun.
So then companies have to kind of use the software to be able to use the data. How does that kind of process then work?
Yeah, so basically the company will use the system, and what it gives them is something very similar to what they would have when they use Comscore anyway, but it basically gives them a week by week, well, day by day, week by week, year by year breakdowns of our forecasted film box office. So for example, you could look at like what you think the top 100 is going to be. We think the top 100 is going to be for 2019. But say you had a film that you wanted to find a release date for, you could kind of look through the weeks and see what the competition's like, maybe try and find a gap in the market for the sort of audience that you're going for. But also the system has different ways you can test out scenarios of putting that, which I think is really fun. So you can basically theoretically put it into different spots and then run reports to see what it would look like. Okay. How much money will you make, or like how much money you would make if you went on the same day as Avengers, but Avengers didn't come out, for example.
Yeah, but then sometimes that works well, doesn't it? Because like, for instance, if you were to distribute Beast,
yes,
which is sort of, you
know, which I did, like, actually.
A kind of a smaller but genre film, and if that is matched up against a blockbuster,
yes, absolutely,
people that aren't interested in those might then filter.
Exactly, and the idea of our system is that it would kind of tell you that, because there would be, to be fair, Avengers is difficult because in our system it basically just performs well across all the different age demographics. But say you had something a bit younger leaning, a bit more teeny, the system would then go, oh, actually there's a huge gap for kind of 35 plus females in the market. Bam, you can put Beast in. Or yeah, Altitude, we did the same thing with Lady Macbeth. Lady Macbeth went up against the second Guardians of the Galaxy film, I want to say, and Beast up against an Avengers film, which is, yeah, it's a really good counter-programming tactic, essentially. But yeah, release date optimization is kind of like the primary purpose of the tool, but you can do a lot more with it.
Yeah, does it tap into the VOD market tool? Because obviously that seems quite geared towards theatrical. Mm.
So yeah, it's mostly theatrical at the moment. They're quite a young company, so I mean, that's another reason I kind of was so attracted to them. Obviously having worked at Altitude, which was like a young growing company, I think I have a thing for like hitting the ground running and getting my like self massively involved in a tiny company. I like that. The thought of working for a studio terrifies me. But yes, so there at the moment it's focused on theatrical, and it's quite a heavy focus on kind of studios and mini majors in terms of the clients they have, rather than indies. So that's kind of been a learning curve for me. What's interesting is there's lots of different companies and systems that kind of analyse cinema data on a more minute level, or yeah, like you say, I don't know that much about home entertainment, but I imagine there probably is a gap in the market for someone who does that level of analysis. So yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think in the next kind of 10-20 years, the amount of the ways in which data is used to kind of drive decisions in film, I think is going to be a lot of changes. The thing about film is it's a really bad investment, actually. No, I was saying this and people are like, how can you say that when you work in film? But it's like, when you compare it to any other product you might invest in, say, I don't know, a food or a new material or something like that, film has an incredibly short shelf life. It's in the cinema for maybe 6 weeks if you're lucky, unless you're like Bohemian Rhapsody and you just play forever. But yeah, it has a really short shelf life, and it's very unpredictable. And even I've realised that you can have an idea of what a film's going to make, but sometimes that just doesn't happen. Yeah, in terms of investment, it's a very risky one to make. But the more data you can use to kind of analyse the decisions you make, the more chance you have of making money out of it. And I think, yeah, as time goes on, people will start to rely more and more on data to make decisions.
Why do you think the appetite for data has grown so much in the last few years?
I think operating as a distributor is becoming increasingly difficult, or that's the impression I get anyway. Obviously, I have only been working in distribution since like 2015, so maybe it's been difficult since I started. But basically, obviously, you've got the argument about, you know, what effect is Netflix having, which people don't really know yet. What effect are high cinema ticket prices having, which people don't really know yet. But what we do know are kind of the effects. And it's becoming increasingly kind of a polarised market. So you'll have like the top 10 or 25 films in a year, for example, will take like 90% of the box office. These are completely made up stats. There's a proper stat for that, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But do you know what I mean? A huge chunk of the box office will be taken by a very small collection of films, pretty much all superhero films or franchise films, things like that.
Well, it's like the wealth gap.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly like that but for superhero films and tiny indies. Mm. And then, yeah, the rest of the box office is for everyone to fight over. And you've got kind of those films that will always be small, you know, special interest, documentary, foreign language, things like that. But what's increasingly difficult is, I mean, the sort of films like Beast, for example, that Altitude try and do, which are really strong, independent, British thriller-drama product. Any of those films kind of that a company like Altitude might do, or one of the mini majors like E1, Lionsgate, etc., it's harder and harder to have just original independent content. Maybe it's funny saying this now, we're in awards season, because awards season kind of changes it a bit. But for the most part, you know, there's not the same amount of, if you think back to kind of when I was growing up, you know, 90s, noughties, there was a lot more just like straightforward, independent, good quality filmmaking that could break out and make millions of pounds. And that stuff's becoming a lot riskier now. So if you're going to do it, you probably want some kind of data to back it up. So that's my theory. I think as the theatrical market becomes more threatened, it's going to have to turn to... Because it's very... Anyone who works in distribution will tell you, it's very kind of like... We always say it's like sticking your finger to the wind. Like everyone... And because there's lots of people who've been in it for years, you kind of just think that you know. And I'm still guilty of doing this, even though I work for a data company now. I'm like, yeah, well, that film will make £5 million. Why? Well, it just will. And yeah, I think that eventually a tide of change will have to come, and these decisions will have to be, you know, thought of in a different way.
It was interesting to me what you said earlier about working for a small company.
Yeah.
And I've often found that you often maybe get more responsibility, and just the hierarchy is flattened, so you get to see a lot more of what's going on. So what attracted you to working for a smaller company, and what do you think the benefits are?
So I think, well, I kind of fell into Altitude. I did something called the Fed Scheme, which is run by the Independent Cinema Office and the Film Distributors Association, which is an incredible scheme. I was on the very first year of it. Basically, it offers women and, well, it's preferential towards women and people of colour. It's positive discrimination. Giving them paid traineeships in film companies, so film distributors and exhibition, which, yeah, the kind of background I come from, I never could have avoided to kind of do the months and months of unpaid internships. So it's a huge opportunity for me. But also, they just place you in the company. So I still feel very lucky to have just landed on my feet at Altitude, a place where I gelled and felt comfortable for so long. I don't know that I knew I wanted to work for a small company, but it's just, yeah, it's that acceleration and feeling involved in kind of all of the day-to-day stuff, you know? Everyone at Altitude was encouraged to read scripts, get involved, share their opinions, you know? Everyone's really, you know, passionate about film, passionate about what the company does, passionate about the sort of films they're releasing. I mean, I haven't worked for a studio. I'm sure some people have a great time working for a studio. But I just really enjoyed that kind of... I like to be able to try loads of different things because I get bored quite easily. And, you know, yes, I was a theatrical sales altitude, but I was trying to do every other thing under the sun I possibly could at the same time because the opportunity was there, because someone needed to do it. But it's just so beneficial to you, you know? And I think the advancement I had in kind of... I mean, I started out as a trainee and I was just kind of general team coordinator for a bit and then... advanced to theatrical sales, and the amount of stuff I learned in that space of time I couldn't have done, I think, at a bigger company.
So was that your first paid job in film, the altitude job?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So how did you even hear about the independent cinematographer scheme? Like,
God bless my mother for. So I was a like down and out, I'm sure lots of people empathise with this, down and out frustrated film studies graduate. So I studied film at Oxford Brookes for 3 years, which is a great uni. As part of that, I spent about 5 months interning, doing marketing for the Pitch House Cinema there, the Phoenix, which was an incredibly valuable experience, I realise now. At the time, I was just like, this is a work experience module, and also I like cinema, so I'll go do this. But what I didn't realise is that I was starting to understand the flow of kind of distributors' product into a cinema and what the cinema has to do to kind of promote that product and market it. So that was really valuable for me in terms of kind of learning things that I'd use later. But yeah, I graduated. I was temping for a good 5-6, maybe more than that, months.
Not in film jobs?
I was in a call centre doing complaints for broken washing machines. I worked in a printing factory. That was quite interesting, actually, where they print like point of sale stuff for shops. But yeah, so continuously applying for film jobs. Didn't really know what I wanted. I just knew I wanted to get my foot in the door somehow. And yeah, my mum had sent me, she was like, I don't really know what this is, but it looks like you'd be good at it. And I'd learnt a bit about film distribution at uni, but to be honest, I bullshitted my way through the interview a little bit. Definitely. And yeah, to my kind of surprise, I got it. But even then, if you consider, I think when I did it, about 400 people applied and there's 12 places.
Whoa. So, yeah, the demand always outstrips.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's part of the problem with distribution in the UK, at least, is there's not actually that many full-time jobs in distribution, and it's such a great sphere to work in that there isn't a huge staff turnover, and there will always be more people who want to. The demand outstrips. I think, yeah, I'm glad that scheme exists, and I've noticed in the kind of past couple of years there's more courses and stuff popping up now, so that's good that they're at least making the path to entry a little clearer, because I'd be lying if I said there wasn't at least some nepotism.
Do you feel like universities can be doing more to give information to students about the roles that are out there? Because I know like some have like alumni days where they bring people that have had success from that degree, so yeah, like film for instance, and they're then using it in the industry. But even I felt like I just had no idea what kind of roles there were out there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think part of my backstory, so to speak, is just my own kind of, I was a student, and you don't pay attention to everything when you're a student. So I think there was definitely, and I have to say actually, as universities that offer film studies go, Oxford Brookes has a huge level of kind of industry provision. They teach industry modules. I did an honours module on like film festivals and exhibition, which was hugely helpful actually for what I then went on to do. I'd say that, but I know from talking to other people who studied film, it's very production focused often. Mm-hmm. And I knew that's not what I wanted to do going into production, and I think a lot of people feel like that's the only option they're given, or when alumni come in it's kind of like, yeah, well, I went and I was a runner for a whole year, and that's not always viable for people. So yeah, absolutely, I think unis could be doing more, but I think the industry could do more as well. I think that's the thing, it's like unis can only provide what the industry is kind of willing to give back to them, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I think they're definitely, it needs to open itself up more in terms of how it interacts with potential young talent, because you could be missing out on some really good people.
Did you know anyone who works in the industry?
No.
So was there anyone that you knew that had like a creative career and that made a living from it, and you kind of thought, okay, maybe that's a possibility, or it was only until you were really doing it that you realised you could work in that way?
Yeah, I don't think I really did. I think I knew a few people who'd done stuff as runners, you know, or been runners in post-production houses and stuff like that. But even that just seemed like I applied for plenty of runner jobs, and it's just they must have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of applications. I don't know how they choose them. No, it took, I still don't even, I think it's that imposter syndrome thing. Even now I'm like, can I make a living out of this? I wouldn't have thought, because that's the thing, I've always loved film. I've always wanted to talk about film and watch film and do not much else. And I say this to people, I'm like, I'm quite boring. They're like, what do you do for fun? And I'm like, well, I watch films. And they're like, oh, okay. Do you do anything else? Sometimes I watch films in the cinema. do you know what I mean? It's like, I have a very singular vision in terms of interests. So to me, yeah, it was just something that I really liked. And yeah, I'm still sort of in disbelief that, I mean, especially my new job, it's like they're just paying me to have an opinion. But I mean, yeah, as someone who loves a good debate, completely beyond me, that they're just like, yeah, we're paying you to tell us what you think of films. Or quite a lot of the people I work with are from kind of an economic-y, finance-y background, which is really interesting. Because again, there's probably loads of people out there who have really good number skills, way better than me. My maths is not good. Who also love film and could come in and be massively valuable on that front, you know?
Do you have anyone now, like a mentor or like support network that you can kind of turn to if you have, you know, questions? I think it's really hard being, well, yeah, at any stage, but
yeah,
sometimes being a young woman and you just don't know, like, I don't know, if you want to ask for a pay rise and you don't know how to do that, or you're just not happy with someone at work and how do you negotiate that? And I think who do you go to might have an idea.
I was talking to a good friend of my dad's, who's like a family friend, about my job, telling him like some of the issues I was having, and he was like, you have unions, right? You have a trade union. And I was like, well, sort of, but no. And like, he was like, why don't you unionise? I was like, well, we're not, no. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, a lot of people don't really get it on that front. In terms of mentors, I think, I'm not sure if it's so much mentors or kind of a peer network, but the good thing about distribution is like everyone is very pally and very friendly with each other. I was so intimidated when I started, and I realised that everyone was just really nice and really normal. But both kind of all of the people I met at Altitude, and especially the women at Altitude, we have such a really amazing, strong bond. They've always looked out for me, and yeah, they were always my sounding board to kind of go to for career advice, or to look to someone who's a bit older and you a bit more than me and might be able to help on that front. I think what's also great is the Fed scheme as well kind of builds an alternative peer network. And a lot of people are starting to recognise this now. They're like, oh, I go to a film event and there's kind of like, there's always like a group of you, like you've gravitated towards each other. And yeah, that's really nice. And being kind of from the first iteration of Feds, I've done what I can to kind of look out for some of the younger people that came through, you know, I say younger, a lot of them are older than me, but some of the people who came through in years.
Yeah, the next gen.
Exactly, the next gen. And like the person who took my job at Altitude when I left is an ex-Feds trainee, for example. Cool. And I kind of, yeah, I guess I've said I'm against nepotism, but I hooked him up with that.
But that's like positive living. Like,
yeah, it's a positive.
You give it to them just because you know them.
Yeah, no, exactly.
That they'd be right.
No, I was just, I was pointing them to it where they may not have realised that it was there for them. And yeah, I think because, actually, Altitude was very much almost 50-50 women, but because women tend to feel, I think it's becoming very obvious with kind of the way things are now, but because women tend to feel like, you know, maybe they're not, it's a man's world, supposedly. You know, I don't know, you gravitate towards other women in the office just because you kind of have a shared experience. But do you know what I mean? A nice thing about living in a patriarchal society is that the women bond with each other, basically.
Yeah, like, what is it about the common enemy in your life?
Yeah, exactly.
You bond over, your shared horrors. Is distribution or the analytics side of things kind of where you see yourself staying, or what does your kind of career path look like in terms of the ideal?
It's a really good question, if you can tell I'm just sort of bumbling through life a little bit. I was saying to people, I'm like, oh, I'm only 26 and, you know, like, I've got plenty of time, and I think actually it's going to run away from very quickly. But yeah, definitely, I don't think I'll ever leave film. I can't see myself doing that. Yeah, that is a certainty, and it's a very optimistic certainty, but yeah, I don't want to. Definitely, yeah, the job I'm in now I did because I wanted to learn something new, I wanted a new perspective, I wanted to broaden my horizons. I think I have a very grass is greener approach most of the time, so I'm quite keen to kind of explore exhibition a bit more, just because that's the other side of what I was doing a distribution, and the company I'm at now kind of work a bit with both. My real end goal is to win the lottery and buy a cinema and just program whatever the hell I want, but amazing. That's a bit unrealistic, so we'll see where my life goes.
But presumably, yeah, the skills that you're learning in this job are only going to benefit, you know, as you say, as the appetite and demand for data grows, like to have a fluency in that.
Yes, absolutely. That's kind of how I saw this job was, I mean, I love working there, but I thought, there are a lot of companies in film who don't realise they need data yet. And if you can turn up as some sort of like data superhero, like, here I am, if data can save you, that should be really beneficial for the future. Because, yeah, I think that's the thing. The whole time I've worked in distribution, there's just been this underlying sense of fragility. It's not a bad thing. It's just that things are changing and people aren't really sure. You know, I'm sure it was the same with video. Started, people aren't really sure how to react to the way things are going. So yeah, I'm just trying to like future-proof myself at the moment, I guess.
And do you have any side hustles, like things that you have on the go outside of work?
I wish I did. I don't as yet. I am quite passionate about underrepresentation of foreign language cinema, filmmakers of colour, things like that. I mostly now just shout into the Twitter void about it. But long-term goal is to try and do something a bit more proactively about that. So, yeah, absolutely side hustle to try and get involved in kind of, be it, you know, programming, distributing, whatever, films from kind of marginalised filmmakers, films you don't normally see. It's definitely kind of something I've been working on a bit and having conversations about, but haven't really got there. Although now I'm saying this on public record.
sometimes that's the motivation you need.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm very pragmatic, and I spend a lot of time thinking that I've not. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, well, I'll just do a bit more preparation before I jump into this thing.
Do you ever feel the pressure though to sort of have something else on your plate? Like, it's not enough. You know, someone says like, "What do you do?" And it's almost not enough just to have your day job.
Absolutely. And it's funny that, and I think I get this kind of, again, the imposter syndrome, the sense of inadequacy, because I know so many amazing women who work in film and do a million other things on the side. They're programming, they're doing, you know, short selection for film festivals, all sorts of kind of, all their writing. And I personally, I think, I mean, thankfully this new job, I mean, part of the reason I took it, and I think we should always be open about these things, is for the sake of my emotional well-being. And that's no shade on altitude or anything, but you know, sometimes, and I think because I'm a very passionate person, sometimes you can become too heavily emotionally involved in the job. And I needed a fresh start on that front, and that's kind of why I've started looking towards my side hustles now. So yeah, there is a lot of pressure, or there's a lot of conceived pressure I put on myself, definitely. And I think that actually it's like, you do have a lot of time, and that's what I keep telling myself. It's like, I've got a lot of ideas, but take it at the pace you feel like you need to take it at, so you can make it the best thing it can be. And self-care always comes first. And I've just, like, generally, personal life had a rocky couple of years, so, like, that came first for me.
How do you practice self-care?
A lot of going to the cinema by myself. That is my ultimate self-care ritual. Yes. I think because that's what I spent a lot of time once I got into this job, realising how I got myself here, and it's because the cinema's always been my safe place, so to speak. And it maybe took me a few years to realise that going to the cinema by yourself is fine, but oh my gosh, now it's just like, it is the perfect kind of detox, because it's like, you're not looking at your phone, you're kind of going on a journey in this world, it's dark, it's quiet, you're not with anyone, so it's just you and the film. So yeah, absolutely. I'm also, I hate saying stuff like this out loud, but I enjoy yoga and meditation. So. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you, but I am a huge yoga advocate. I hate to use that buzzword, but it's a very mindful thing to do, actually, going and watching a film by yourself and then reflecting on it by yourself. And yeah, some of the most emotional responses I've had to films have been in that kind of space.
That's interesting, talking about taste, and also I feel like you're quite primed to answer this, but what are some of the like trends that you've been seeing in cinema recently? Can you speak to that?
That's a really good question. I feel so terrible to say it, but women. I'm just glad we're getting behind women, finally. Well, and diverse casts, actually, as well. So things like Black Panther and Crazy Rich Asians, obviously. But Widows is a film that actually should have done better. But still gained some traction as a film with a diverse cast and women. But I'm enjoying the fact that we're starting to see films where that's not an not the main issue, it's just there. For example, so I went to go see, I rewatched Bill Street, if Bill Street Could Talk at the weekend, and I love the fact that, I mean, that is a film about race, but also it's just, it's a love story, it's a family story, race isn't, it's part of the story, but it's not the whole story, and that's a film for all audiences, it's not just a film for black audiences. Likewise, Us, the horror film that's coming out, the Jordan Peele horror film, he's even gone on record and kind of said, you know, yes, they're a black family, but that's not the point of the film, it's just a horror film. They're just a black family. So I'm really happy that you're kind of, and every time I kind of see that representation, you sometimes have to take a moment and pinch yourself that you haven't really seen people of colour on screen without it being a problematic portrayal or, you know, trying to make a point. Same goes for kind of queer representation on screen as well. So late to the party, but I finally watched Love, Simon a few weeks ago, which is just like, why weren't they making teen films like that when I was a teenager, you know? I would have loved it. But yeah, I'm just really glad that kind of as per the narrative in the world, representation is becoming better. Yeah, less of a kind of, it's just there, rather than it being a talking point. And I hope that can continue. It just seems very obvious to me, and I won't name names, but I've overheard a certain white middle-aged middle-class producer being like, oh, films for women are really working at the moment, aren't they? And it's like, well, they are 50% of the population.
Yeah, and often the people that go to the cinema.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So I think it's just, yeah.
Well done for catching up.
Exactly, but I like the idea that it's like, hopefully because these films keep drawing in an audience who feel like they couldn't see themselves on screen, then people will realise that that's a vital element of the films we need to make going forward. Fingers crossed. But then also, I don't know, it's a bit one step forward, two steps back sometimes.
Yeah.
I look at the fact that Moonlight won Best Picture. I had to get that in somehow. Moonlight won Best Picture in 2017, and I'm not sure if we've come forward since then. But that happened, so it's good.
It's like a pendulum thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, where something is really celebrated, and then it kind of scales back because it was like, okay, well, we tick that box.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. I kind of felt that was, I don't know, it was funny. It was weird being on the front line of it. I was like, I don't want this to be a box ticking exercise, so I'm going to believe that it isn't. But you could argue that maybe it was given the timing. I don't know. I hope not, because Barry Jenkins is a gifted filmmaker. And we just need those films in the world without it being box ticking. That's kind of the whole point of making. Representation is something I'm hugely passionate about, and I think we could still be doing way more, you know, and way more to kind of diversify the film content that's available.
Yeah.
As well.
So obviously that's on-screen representation.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's diverse behind the scenes?
Less so, and that's the thing, because you need the diversity behind the scenes to propel the diversity on the other side of it, basically. It's that simple. And I think, you know, yeah, schemes like I did, like the Fed scheme, are great, but you have to be aware of the fact that it's like, you can't, dropping 12 people into the industry once a year, it takes time to make a difference. And I think the thing that people seem to be mostly blind to at the moment is the fact that there's still not enough diversity amongst decision makers. I know it's been said a lot, but that's because it's true. You know, the decision makers, and at the end of the day, it's funny because you work in film and people are telling you not to choose films that you might want to release based on your personal opinion, and yet the decision makers seem to be doing that all the time because, you know, it's a bunch of, try not to get too like angry, but bunch of like white middle class people picking films for other white middle class people, and that can kind of continue to perpetuate unless there's, you know, people who can make, and I think it's changing very slowly, and I just hope that it continues to change, because then that's how you take it from being a box ticking gesture to a real industry-wide change, is by, you know, getting those people up into positions of power where they'll stay. I try to remain optimistic about kind of the tides of change and that it can only get better from here.
And have you ever found that difficult? Have you ever felt like your opinion isn't valued in a room?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's quite hard when, I think I have quite kind of, my taste can be away from the norm a lot. I've always found like a pride in being different. But yeah, I do, and I mean, working distribution could be really frustrating, either because you'd be working on a film that you thought was really brilliant and you thought that everyone should see it and everyone should love it, and it wouldn't do that well. A film like The Rider, for example, which is still one of the most incredible films I've ever seen.
I feel like it's a slow burn, like maybe people still can...
People will come around to that film and like, well, Chloe Zhao signed on to do a Marvel film now, so they'll be going, oh man, have you seen that film, The Rider, she did like 5 years later. In the same way that Altitude, actually before my time, released Fruitvale Station, which is Ryan Coogler, who directed Black Panther, rest my case. It can be really, really frustrating, both, working on films that people don't seem to pick up on, or also when you see, you know, really good films fall by the wayside because it's considered that there's no audience for them, and you're like, well, I know there's an audience for them. I'm one audience member, but I know, for example, all my friends would come. But sometimes those films either won't get picked up, or if they do get picked up, it's with very little effort towards marketing and spend, which I get because, again, risk. It's hard sometimes to balance kind of what I want to see as a consumer and what I know, how I know distribution business operates. But I think there is a sweet spot, and I think there's certain films that have come out. The Rider, for example, Sorry to Bother You. I mean, that did alright, but you know, I think more people could have been made aware of that film. That was a film that was hugely behind last year. I just thought it was really fresh and interesting and, you know, innovative. Everything that everyone said about it. Yeah, I just wish I could. Miseducation of Cameron Post is another one. I wish I could see those films making more of a splash. Because as many audience members as they get to, another thing I lie awake in bed thinking about is all the people that should be seeing that film who haven't.
Obviously, you mentioned a few there, and you talked about Widows not doing perhaps as well as being expected. Could you maybe speak to some of the factors that you, again, like marketing spend not being put behind them, but what else is sort of, is it that people don't know about them, people like just aren't being persuaded to come to the cinema? Why do some films underperform?
I mean, there's so many factors at play now, definitely. I think, bear in mind, obviously, that the millennial generation are still kind of a very wide proportion of filmgoers, but we all have no money. We're the worst off that our generation's ever been. And then at the same time, the cinema's becoming more and more expensive. And then the people that can afford to go to the cinema are often the people who will just go and see, you know, a slightly more, they're not going to take risks with their money. If they have the option of Bohemian Rhapsody or Sorry to Bother You, they're going to go for Bohemian Rhapsody because they know that it's a safe choice, you know? Whereas if the cinema was half the price, they might go see both of them. So I think, cinema pricing, I could talk about for hours, but I think that's definitely got... And then, it's economics in general. I think there is a general unwillingness to take risks from distributors, which I understand is difficult. I think the BFI do great things in kind of the support they offer to distribution companies with film campaigns. And films like Shoplifters, for example, which I love, actually overperformed to a certain extent, for a foreign language film anyway. And that obviously had, I think it had like BFI fan support, things like that. I think, the support is out there, but a lot of films just aren't. And again, I think it's the lack of decision makers who really understand the film. It's usually one of the junior people that's fighting for the film who thinks it's important, who thinks it could do well. And if the decision makers aren't listening to that, they will, you know, decide not to spend so much money on it. I think also things can be very London-centric. I mean, I'm from London, so it's taken me longer than most to become self-aware of the London bubble. But I realise more now I have friends who live outside London, and, you know, I travelled quite a lot around the country when I was at Altitude for various, you know, film-related things. And you realise, actually, if you're not a weekly attender of your local art house cinema, these films could just completely go over your head. So yeah, and bearing in mind that all of distribution is based in London, I think sometimes there's not an understanding of how to break out of that bubble and appeal to kind of a wider section of people.
You can see it happening slightly now with sort of like the regional Q&As that people do.
Yeah, exactly.
You get a week to maybe for a film to make a splash. Yeah. And then you've got a whole other set of things.
Yeah. I mean, there's also too many films, which that's a difficult one because I don't know. I don't think any film's unworthy. But there are, you know, there's just, if you look at the statistics of films, there's significantly more films released than year on year. And that means that it's harder to cut through.
It's literally a blessing and a curse.
So we kind of live in this era of, like, overwhelming choice as well. It's like we have so much on offer outside of the cinema as well now. And I'm not one of these people to say that Netflix is killing cinema, because I think it's more nuanced than that. But when people have more choice and less money, It's going to drive people away from cinemas, basically. Sadly.
Speaking of things that people don't get to see, what is a film, can be new or old, you think is undervalued that should have been kind of given more attention?
I'll tell you what, the film that I will never shut up about, and I don't know how useful it is, because I don't know how you can see this film in the UK. Grace, who you had on the show, and her incredible Real Good Film Club screened it a little while back. It's a film called Pariah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is directed by Dee Reese, who directed Mudbound, and now has a Blumhouse, I'm so excited for this, she has a Blumhouse horror film on the way that's about a lesbian couple starring Mary J. Blige.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm saying about, you know, representation getting better. I was like, I just read the synopsis and I feel like they're making this film just for me. Is this what everyone else feels? But yeah, Dee Reese's Pariah. Again, actually, it was a weird moment for me because it was only maybe 3 years ago when I saw it, and I've always loved films for various reasons, but it was one of the very first films I saw that I felt was just talking, like, directly to me. I was in a cinema full of people, but I felt like it was just me, and I was like, how has this director got inside my head, basically? I mean, yeah, it's an amazing film. It's about a young black girl who's kind of coming to terms with her sexuality as a teenager. And yeah, I think I just saw so much of myself in that character, and yeah. If you can see that film, if you can seek it out somehow,
I think it's on Google Play.
Okay, there you go.
I've seen it recently.
Okay, cool. All right, great, fantastic. I'm so glad. So
yeah, you can recommend
that's
it.
That's the good thing about streaming services is that we have access to all these kind of American indies that just disappear.
Although there's still like so many. Oh god, I go to like watch something and I just can't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm someone that I don't like to illegally download or stream.
No, absolutely same.
Like, kind of. There are many platforms now where it's like $3.49 and like that's pennies.
Exactly.
I'll pay that, but it's just not out there. Yeah. I just can't find
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
The relationship with her parents is so
exactly.
beautifully drawn.
Exactly. The whole, yeah, just all the relationships in that film are beautifully drawn. And yeah, things, so many kind of films like that go massively under the radar. I'm massively into kind of Korean and Japanese language cinema. So out at the moment, Burning, which actually people are going to see, so it's not even an undervalued gem, but it's just beautiful. It's 2.5 hours long and it's very ambiguous and quiet and slow, but Steven Yeun's in it and he's great. All the performances are great, actually. And it's one of those films, if you just relax and let yourself go with it, it is, I'm still not sure I 100% understand what happened, but oh my gosh, it's just stunning. Mm. It looks amazing. Other Korean, I'm really into, although I always thought I was cool for liking Hong Sang-soo, and now I've realised, I mean, they're doing a movie season at the moment, and I realise that those are the people like Hong Sang-soo, so I can't act like I'm cool for knowing him now, but...
no, but you can definitely lay claim to knowing him before he became kind of mainstream.
Yeah, his film's really interesting because they're not what you normally see in Korean cinema in a lot of senses, in a similar way to Burning, actually. It's not the kind of genre fair that is what we normally get over here. He's basically...
They feel quite French.
Yes, they feel quite French. They feel a bit Woody Allen, if I'm still allowed to say that. in a good way. Good Woody Allen. And actually, the women have a lot more agency and power than they do in Woody Allen films. It's almost like what I wish Woody Allen films were like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah, they feel very European, but it's really... And they're not all the best films I've ever seen, but there's something really interesting about watching... I think that's kind of globalisation and how it's hit film, watching a Korean director who's obviously been really heavily influenced by European filmmaking. So that's cool. Also, I've watched some stuff at the Japan Foundation Touring Film Programme?
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's a trip off the
which plan. Is going around the... I mean, I don't know when this will go out, but it's travelling around the UK at the moment. Mm. And their season at the moment is all about love and relationships. Some more of my favourite things to see on screen. Yeah. and I saw two really good films there called Tremble All You Want, which was kind of this like really fun but still touching Japanese rom-com. And a film called Pumpkin and Mayonnaise, which was a really good like Japanese romantic drama. They were both about kind of women in their mid-20s going through relationship crises, and that was nice because I know
I can relate.
Yeah, exactly. It's just nice to go and watch a Japanese film that doesn't even have distribution over here and still feel like you relate with the character.
Yeah.
And then that's what takes me back to thinking, well, you know, we should diversify our film output, because actually whilst it might look inaccessible from the surface, it probably has something interesting to say.
Have you heard of a film called Little Forest?
Yes, and I still haven't seen it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, actually, I think it's one of Grace's faves.
Yeah.
But yeah, having heard you kind of what you like and what you talk about.
Yeah, I know that film is definitely for me. It's on my, I think it's showing at the Barbican soon as part of that festival they do with all the ridiculously talented young people. Yeah, so I'll try and go and see it there because yeah, I missed it at LFF.
And then if there's someone that you've worked with or just know of that you think is doing amazing things in the industry that you're like, kudos.
Can't say Grace. No, but honestly, and Grace will always tease me about this, but she came to work with us as an intern at Altitude, and I was just like, but you're amazing, why are you here? Like, you've done some good things. And I think she was doing some really amazing programming.
Yeah, but I do like that, there's a lot of young women I know that are sort of just taking the power into their own hands.
Yeah.
And they form these, like, offshoots, and they're just saying, okay, well, we're not seeing these films in the cinemas.
Yes, yeah, so
we put them on, because I know that my friends would want to see them.
Exactly. Oh, I have to big up a group called the New Black Film Club, run by a woman called Priscilla, who I love dearly, and they screen a lot of films, you know, for black audiences. Well, for all audiences, but often, you know, films about black culture. And they do a lot kind of in Stratford, which is why I don't go to many of their events, because I'm a South East London gal and I don't go north the river. But I watch from afar, and I like the fact that they're kind of taking films, like, for example, we work with them on Moonlight and various other things. They take films like that out to, you know, Stratford, somewhere where there's an audience that might not normally reach them. So, and I think Priscilla's just like a very wise, cool, fun, intelligent person who's doing the right things for film.
Yeah. Amazing. That has been really interesting. Thank you.
Cool. So I hope so.